Hello, welcome to the IPR podcast. I am your host, Ruo Yuli, and today we invited two scholars to discuss Dr. Catherine Charette's book, The EU, Hamas, and the 2006 Palestinian Elections, A Performance in Politics. Of course, we have Catherine with us, currently a senior lecturer at the University of Westminster. And we also have Dr. Christopher Newfield, the Director of Research at the Independent Social Research Foundation. He was formerly Distinguished Professor of English at UC Santa Barbara. Before the conversations, Catherine would like to read some paragraphs from the beginning of her book.
At 3 a.m. on the 30th of September, 2012, I got into a large car that was taxiing a group of people from Cairo to Rafah crossing. The journey took 7 hours. I slept the whole way. It took another 4 hours to cross the border from Egypt into Gaza. At 7:30 a.m. on the 9th of December, 2012, I arrived at the UN School for the Blind in Gaza City. I was meeting a special convoy which had been urgently arranged to evacuate people from Gaza. People holding a non-Palestinian passport were able to flee Israel's bombardment of Gaza. It took 1 hour to get to the Rafah crossing. I cried the whole way. At 5 p.m. on the 18th of June, 2013, I sat down in a park close to the European Commission. I took out my notebook to write a few thoughts following an interview. This is why the drag performance is necessary. We're all too good at behaving properly, correctly. This way you get the answers you are looking for instead of asking new questions. We need to be queer to be able to ask new questions. At 5 p.m. on the 23rd of June, 2013, I lay down in a park close to the European Parliament. I took out my notebook to write down a few thoughts following an interview. I'm in another stupid park. I just had a meeting with a racist asshole. I feel like crying. I feel like shit. In the end, the voice which was the lowest common denominator was this one, Hamas or terrorists. This is the discourse, which one?
Thank you, Catherine, for sharing the quotes. And I wonder, could you introduce our audience to the context of the politics that you're just describing?
Thanks so much for inviting us. The context of the book is taking place in the occupied Palestinian territories following the success of Hamas in the 2006 Palestinian legislative elections. And the context is a movement that had been listed on the European Union terrorist list and had decided to participate in these elections for various reasons. And it's a context in which the European Union and other actors were strongly supporting this electoral process in the region, part of a sort of larger democratization sort of effort. So, you know, in terms of the European Union monitoring these elections, USAID and the EU paying for the elections. And then, of course, you know, on the ground, significant local support for having an electoral process. Now, of course, that support wasn't always there. So Hamas initially had not wanted to engage in the electoral process, seeing it as a very unjust product of the Oslo Accords. Other groups in Palestine felt the same. So the PFLP have always maintained a position against having elections. But in 2005, the sort of internal Hamas organizing structure decided to participate in these elections. Part of that was to, you know, gain sort of international recognition, but also to sort of democratize and legitimize its governing structures within the occupied Palestinian territories. It explores the sort of immediate aftermath of that event, right? Which was essentially the book sort of accounts for this closing down of what the elections might have opened up. Right. So there's a lot of energy going into the elections. And then the book kind of explores the year and a half, you know, after Hamas' success and what it meant for a movement that kind of troubled some of sort of European American ideals of who should have been allowed to win.
That sounds like really, really intense politics were happening at the time. And I wonder for Chris, having read the book, what was some of your key takeaways that you want to share with our audience?
I was reading this kind of with my, you know, eyes popping out because I hadn't ever really focused on the 2006 election. So that what an expert would already know, but which the general public would probably not know, is that the European Union withdrew support for the election retroactively after they decided they didn't like the outcome, which was that Hamas won. So it's sort of, here's Europe, you know, the self-anointed cradle of democracy, saying, oh, well, democracy is long as the people we want win. And they just like nullified the election, which, or just wouldn't acknowledge the results. And then the second big finding for me, I mean, every, you know, and which I think maybe is more unique to the large amount of field work that you did, you know, the interviews and so on with people, is that they knew that they were doing the wrong thing. So there's this political master discourse, and then underneath there's the people who are just enforcing or implementing this, you know, sort of top-down consensus. And then on the other hand, as individual people, your people didn't like it, would explain why they had to do it, but at the same time, I think this is one of the things you really picked up, didn't think it was going to work. So they were very torn, and there's a bunch of stuff about how things might be better if we follow our affects rather than our political doctrines in your work. And I was very intrigued by that.
To add to that, like, I think there was that kind of level of detail of like what people tried to do, especially in terms of Hamas, right? Like trying to maintain channels of communication open, like sending letters to Condoleezza Rice, like Bassem Naim, who's like the health minister, like getting on a plane, traveling to Brussels, you know, trying to keep, you know, channels of communication open. And I think that's also something that's, you know, not described in public knowledge, right? That it kind of was trying to maintain some of those channels of communication open. And similarly with some of the technocrats working in the European Union, that they were saying, you know, for the conditions that they imposed on Hamas, that there were no benchmarks to even gauge whether Hamas was, you know, was coming close to them. And what I sort of argue in the book is that those conditions were never meant for Hamas to accept, right? So there's this idea that like the other always has to remain sort of excluded from sort of European diplomacy. And I think just the last thing is that some of those conversations, you know, with Hamas sort of revealed is this sort of, they describe these stories of violence kind of waged against them and against other Palestinians. One, you know, anecdote, these German diplomats come and visit them. And I think they said someone visited them 17 times about this captured soldier, Gilad Shalit, who they had, you know, they had been captured in a particular operation by Hamas. And they say, you know, all these diplomats come and they're very concerned for this Israeli soldier that's been captured. But they never come to talk about Palestinian lives. And they talked about the family of Huda Galia, who was bombed to death on a beach. And there, you know, this was, I think, just around 2007. And it's, before the series of wars that have been waged on the Gaza Strip since Hamas came into power, right? So this is also like the context in this which this is happening in terms of the consequences of sort of turning away from a diplomatic engagement with Hamas, labeling the Gaza Strip as a hostile territory. That's also this context, right? Where, you know, Palestinian life continues to be undervalued in diplomatic encounters, especially, and then of course, you know, in Israeli war making against Gaza.
Thanks for sharing this. And as much as this book is about violence and struggles, it also points to many other things, right? Including affect, queerness, and creativity. So I wonder if both of you could speak a little bit more about these openings that the book provides.
Something I would highlight is the theme that comes up at the end, also in a compressed way, creativity over foreclosure. So Catherine writes, this book argued for an alternative departure point from which to imagine political possibilities and policy initiatives. It aimed to explore the possibility for a coming together in politics. I mean, imagine that, a coming together in politics, which does not reinforce relations of subjugation, oppression, and hierarchy. A politics of creativity over foreclosure works from a place of disruption and revelation. It rejects that politics is a certain way, and rather it strives to write for an alternative, perhaps more sensitive iteration of politics. And I like that phrase, it strives to write for, I mean, I don't think that's a typo. I don't think you meant to say it strives to fight for. It strives to write for an alternative. You know, it's, in other words, that there's you quote poets and other people in here, that there's a discourse, both oral and written, that mixes the two modes together, that does conjure forth this alternative politics that's grounded in not only in people's everyday lives, but in particular in affects of, interactivity, that's bottom up rather than top down, if we had to just binarize it. So, I found that quite inspiring. People will think, oh, well, that's very idealistic about politics. Politics isn't like that. States don't work that way. But the argument in your book is that, they could. People can clearly articulate what seems utopian. So it's actually not just utopian. If the people that you're talking to on the European side are kind of feeling that that would be better, and then the Palestinians who you're interviewing are saying very eloquently what would be better, there's another world that is possible. And you can just see people writing it or saying it.
Thank you, Chris. Catherine?
I think part of the book was sort of refusing to really pin meaning down and have something be permanently settled, like trying to look for the possibility of otherwise. Some of the writing draws on poetry, for example, Darwish, right? And I think there's a line in the book, create a language for hope, screen beyond the text. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. Darwish, who always sort of, his critiques were scathing, but also emotional. And I think there's a lot in that. Part of the kind of style of the text, which is always quite hard to describe, is trying to draw links between different experiences. I think that the book kind of picks up this theme of forbidden desire. And the way that I kind of describe this is this desire to love the other fully. And the book expresses this through how love is sort of conditioned through racial foreclosures, which, Judith Butler talks about this through Frantz Fanon's work. And also Sam Apando, he doesn't look at it through the language of queerness, but I love his work. And I guess it's just this idea that, the European diplomat or the European mind might see the other as fully human. And I think what the book picks up on is the incapacity for the European diplomat to recognize that Hamas might be a movement representing a certain group, that it might not be fully sort of knowable by the European mind, right? And the European thinks that they know. For certain. Cindy Weber's book picks up on this, that it's like this idea that you know what you're seeing. And there's some interesting scene, like even the conversations where, like, behind closed doors, European diplomats will admit that they, would like to be engaged with Hamas. Jasbir Puar's work on this, like, it recognizes that Hamas is not that sort of the monster terrorist fag, right? That kind of scary, perverse other, the deviant other who can't possibly love and have a relationship with. What I kind of argue in the book is that that would also imply, like, the European mind, like, seeing itself as something different, recognizing that it doesn't know actually what's going on. And I think I end the book in that way, or I created a performance piece based on this research, and the performance piece ends with the phrase, like, I don't know. The queerness is sort of based on allowing radical forms of connection, of solidarity, of brotherly love to, like, emerge when something isn't already settled and controlled.
Thank you, Catherine and Chris, for this wonderful discussion. And thank you for listening. See you next time.